Hi, welcome to BA Brew. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Karen.
And today we're going to be talking about mischief management. And I'm absolutely delighted that Karen's come back to join us on the brew, because I thought our last discussion about solutions was fascinating. It's one I still think about today. And I often talk to other people about that podcast. So I'm really pleased that you're here. Today we're going to talk about mischief management. And I want to warn all the viewers, listeners, Mike's in a funny mood. Right? He's going to want to cause mischief. He's already broken our branding guidelines. So Karen's on brand with the BA Brew mug that she got from last time. And Mike's decided he wants to publicise his favourite hobby, or one of his favourite hobbies, which is park run. So today we're going to talk about mischief management. And I'm going to start by asking Karen, what is this concept of mischief management? Could you explain it for the viewers and listeners, please?
Yeah, I can, sure. So I use the term mischief in a kind of fun way. And I presented this originally last year at the BA conference, because it's being able to recognise where you've got these maybe more complex or complicated asks of the business analyst team, where there isn't a clear problem statement, where there is different points of view of between stakeholders as to what we want to solve or what good would look like. And it's usually you can spot them by, they might have taken a few times to go round looking at the problem, and they haven't really resolved anything. So you see signs of it, like things where you're going in meetings and people have said, well, we've talked about this for years. And they use the word mischief in a kind of fun way. So it's not the intent of anybody when they're doing this, usually. There might be the odd person, but usually the intent is kind of sort of that unintended mischief, like they're just being who they are and having, trying to helpfully sort things out. But by doing that, you've ended up in kind of like a knot in a necklace or something, and it's become sort of really difficult to tease out, because you've got all of these different people, different views, different ideas, different ways of trying to sort it out. So you end up in this mischief situation. So in the conference last year, excuse me, I spoke about like how to recognize those and then how to think about practical ideas to manage it.
So it's like it's a knot. I love the knot in a necklace analogy as a category of business problem. And it's like, how do we spot that really complex problem, and how might we then start exploring it from the different perspectives? And is there a bit of it, Karen, where you're causing mischief by asking questions about that knot, about that business problem? Is that part of it as well?
I think to a certain extent, Jonathan, it is, because you need to grapple with the problem, right? So if it's become this knot, it's usually because people have like gone through a number of iterations, maybe other BAs, maybe other consultants, maybe other business people, to solve the problem. And they've gone through kind of like a mechanical route of perhaps, you know, defining something, talking to people about what the answer will be, and then hoping that they're going to deliver that. And the bit that you kind of need to bring into it is understanding that you're also dealing with stakeholders, kind of emotions, biases, general history of and context of the problem. So all that kind of stuff that we as humans all have. And so you do have to grapple a little bit with that. So sometimes it is kind of finding a different way, or asking different questions, or presenting things and trying to get those people on board as well. So yeah, there is a kind of little element of perhaps rocking the boat a little bit. Yeah, causing a bit of mischief.
Yeah. Now, Mike, you'd never do that, would you? Rock the boat?
No, definitely.
You wouldn't get on with your stakeholders and ask questions that are difficult or anything like that.
Yeah, I try not to. I just be quiet. I really like the concept of the knot in the necklace, because that, thinking that through a little bit, if you don't deal with that knot in the necklace, then it gets even more knotty, and it's going to become more challenging to solve that. So the idea of thinking, well, there is a knot, can I just ignore it, or do I need to do something about it? And sometimes, yeah, you might need to do something about it, otherwise it gets worse. And I like that analogy. I think that's really good. And you can probably build on that. That's really good. Well, the point you made about the people, we deal with a whole load of stakeholders. And if you deal with the stakeholders just on the basis of their role, you're missing most of the person. And everybody has, they have their own lives, they have things going on in their lives. And that might affect the behaviors. And maybe that's mischief, maybe we might interpret that different ways, but they might be behaving in a way that you wouldn't expect that stakeholder to behave. And that could be because there's something serious going on that they haven't shared with you, that solution that we're talking about, or this project we're talking about, might not be the most important thing to them. And that's a really tricky one, because unless they volunteer that information, and they probably won't if it's challenging, that the environment that we're talking in when we're dealing with those stakeholders probably doesn't actually suit revealing some of those things. So you kind of got to build relationships and have discussions with stakeholders beforehand rather than trying to deal with stuff straight away.
If you jump straight into, okay, what's causing the knot, the problem, and their perspective on it, if you haven't got rapport, they might not share their real deep underlying beliefs, values, their kind of priorities, and where they what they really think's going on with this knot problem. So you can get to a point where they trust you to be able to share what they really think about this knot and what's going on, and they're not necessarily going to do that on the first time you meet them, unless they're really open. And so have you got any kind of, how do you get to that level of trust, rapport, when there is that really hairy, horrid question, or not in the necklace, our problem analogy? How do you get there, to get to that level of rapport with a stakeholder?
Is there any? Yes. This kind of sits very nicely with when you talked about the last talk that I did on the solution delusion. So if you remember on there, we talked about meeting people where they are. So this is another kind of, another technique, slightly different position in the process that you would use this. But it's another technique where it is about trust, and it is about meeting people where they are. So for instance, in the tool that I actually presented, it was potentially understanding kind of what was underpinning how we've got into this knot. So that might be, that there's a lot of context, a lot of history, a lot of water under the bridge, a lot of other things that perhaps aren't being shared, like Mike said, a lot of kind of human nature type stuff, like I've got a lot to lose here. I'm following kind of the line that everybody else has got. I've got a strong opinion in that room. So there might be deference to other people. So it's first of all understanding that stuff is part and parcel of solving the problem. Like we said, it's not just kind of defining the space, but it's understanding what's going on for those people and why they're taking the positions that they're taking. And then in the tool, I talked about then there's usually a number of options, but that might have been spoken about between that group, but they haven't really got anywhere. And usually that's because there's not one obvious option that will come out. So then you want to kind of present the options in terms of what the trade-offs might be. And when you're thinking about trade-offs, you want to think about what's important to those stakeholders. So again, you're understanding, like, what are they trying to achieve through this? Is it something about the customer? Is it something about cost saving? Is it something about a regulatory thing? Like, what are the key areas? And so that you can present like the options and then a recommendation based on what they care about, rather than a kind of sanitized solution that you quite often see in this space is I've looked at all the problem space and this is the answer. So again, harking back to the previous talk about solutions, is that coming in and trying to just save the world is not the right thing to do. You need to build that empathy. And then obviously then there's things like actually going in and seeing what they do and understanding before you're making a decision, so that they know that you've taken the time to learn their world rather than just kind of jumping in and saying these are the answers. So it's a lot about stakeholder management in line with the tools and techniques we use to tease out a problem.
Yeah, brilliant. Mike, are there techniques that are jumping out in your head that are these are the useful techniques I can use in this area that maybe some of our listeners might have heard of or come across?
Yeah, well, not particular technique that people might have heard of, but just an approach that I've taken. I've done some large workshops before now, and I've known that there have been worked on an HR and payroll program replacing a load of systems within the university where I previously worked. And one of the things we knew that there were things that people were some challenges that people were dealing with, and those were going to get in the way potentially of the discussion about what we needed to do in the workshop. So one of the things I've done quite often, it's not just in that situation, is before we get into the meat of the workshop, say, right, what things have you got to get off your chest? And give people the chance to vent and raise things and pop them on post-it notes. And we'd put them all up onto the wall and talk about things that say, well, we're going to address some of these in the workshop, but some of these other ones, we can't possibly address those, but we're part. So we're not ignoring them. We're just saying, let's put them to one side. We've noted them, and we'll come back to them if there's time, or we'll come back to them on another occasion. But the real benefit of that is people have then got it out of their system, and they can then move on. It's not solved, but they're not thinking all the way through the workshop, I really want to say this, or that I'm not happy about this. You've had that opportunity to mention it, and it's solved.
Mm. It's quite therapeutic, isn't it? Actually share, I've got this issue, or I've got this thing, the risk or impact that you're worried about, and just being listened to for any stakeholder, for any human, it's like air. You've been listened to, and you can't solve all the problems necessarily, particularly in these complex environments that we're working within. But that listening to the stakeholder might give them the sense of confidence that they can actually share what the real issues are, the real kind of underpinning problems in their context. And the other thing about listening, and I know we think of listening as using your ears to compute what it is that someone else has said, but I think you can think about listening as listening to what's going on in the culture, listening not with your eyes and looking at people's behaviors. And I'm not sure that is the traditional view of listening. It's kind of, let's observe what's going on and analyze it. But I think we can really listen to and try and analyze, well, what is the culture that we're in? Because if we've got a senior stakeholder blocking something because they're trying to get their next promotion, or they're worried about a restructure or something, if you don't know that, you can't solve that. That could be the knot. And it's really hard to find out about that unless you're really paying attention to what's going on in the culture of the problem context. I don't know if that resonates at all, though. Karen?
It does. I think there is things that, you're never going to surface, and things that and those might be personal things for those people, or they might be cultural things, or they might be other strategic things that are happening. So when I kind of presented this as a tool, I encouraged BAs to put a recommendation forward based on, what you've learned, what you've understood about that group of people, what you've understood about the problem and the next couple of steps. Go back to the knot analogy. These things as well usually take a number of sort of goes to unpick it. So you might have to go around a few times. But it's recognizing that people, need a bit of time to kind of to understand and see that you're going through this and need to have the steps crafted for them a bit to kind of, so that they know they feel comfortable that they're moving forward in the right way.
I'm sat thinking about gap analysis, current target state analysis, the traditional route of looking at stakeholder perspectives, worldview, for those of you that are familiar, CatWOS, business activity models, all that kind of stuff, and then evaluating options, doing divergent, convergent thinking on problems and solutions. And then I'm thinking force field analysis could be really useful for you to analyze the forces for or against a particular proposal for change. And the other one, and it was mentioned in our pre-pod discussion, Kinefin, but identifying you've got a knot, Kinefin could be the tool or technique, if we prefer that language of technique, that helps you to realize, oh, this is a really knotty problem that I can't just draw a swim lane diagram for. And there are those types of problems, and swim lanes are brilliant, but some problems might require you to think a little bit differently, do some creative thinking, divergent thinking about what really is the root cause and what you might do about it. I've just listed about 20 different techniques, which was way too much.
They're all valuable. They're all valuable. And you know, you try different things to see what you find, don't you? But this goes high with the Kinefin bit, because it might even be that you're just aware of being able to identify that that's a problem of that nature. And so you're not trying to go around that kind of simple, you know, the easier route of defining the as is, defining the to be and working out the gap. Like because I've seen people before get themselves tied up, no pun intended, on trying to solve these things when they are in those more that's not going to be the route through. So even if the takeaway for BAs who feel that managing that mischief is a bit beyond their kind of experience at the moment, even recognizing that's a situation that they're in is massively important. They can then use the rest of their team to help support them in that.
Yeah. And that reaching out for support, should you find yourself in one of these knotty, complex or, you know, difficult situations, and I've certainly done this in the past, and I imagine you both have as well, you find someone that you trust that you can have a discussion about this with. Because these, if there's complex politics, cultural elements going on, and you're not kind of used to thinking about that, having someone that you trust to talk about that situation context with could be really useful. And for the more senior kind of and experienced BAs, it's their job to support the newer BAs to help with the navigation of those complex knots. And just as we're thinking about this complex knot analogy, I'm thinking about necklaces that have got loads of knots in them as well, Karen. Like there's just, it's not one knot, it's a big knot. It's like a hairball kind of situation.
I've got the classic down here on the side of me, a box of cables, laptop cables and whatever. And isn't it funny that you put them in there, you try and put them in there and not allow them to tie up. And as soon as you go in the box, they've all managed to kind of tie themselves together. So it's not even just like one thing. It's like they've managed to somehow loop themselves around the other one. And that, again, is probably a good analogy of what we're looking at here. It's like that something's managed to wrap itself around something else. That managed to wrap itself around something else, has managed to connect itself to something that's like, oh, this could be a good idea. We could do this whilst we're doing that. And all of a sudden it's become a really like complex situation and many elements of mischief to manage.
Yeah, going along that analogy, you pull at one cable, which makes things worse because it tightens something else up elsewhere. And I think we could really stretch that analogy. One of the other things I was thinking really around the problem piece, if you've got different stakeholders with different views of the problem, if you've got a really challenging problem, there isn't going to be a single answer that's necessarily going to deal with it. So therefore, managing those, working with those stakeholders to try and get to the solution is even more challenging, because there isn't one can say that's the standout solution. And maybe that's the point to work with people to say, well, let's try things out. Let's experiment to see if we can learn something more to help solve that problem.
I'm glad you've said that, because that's kind of two elements of the tool. If you have got that, that's probably a very key sign that if not one options and one key kind of solutions emerging, then you've got solutions which none of them are going to be a perfect answer. So then it's going back to that, thinking about what's important to them, and then presenting to those stakeholders, those decision makers that need to agree, what those options look like in context. So I had a very kind of simple RAG table, red, amber, green, that says, you know, if cost is the most important thing here, what are the comparatives in terms of those options for cost? If customer service is customer journey is the most important thing, then what's the comparative? And there might be three or four of those. In fact, I would encourage people to kind of find three or four of them. Don't go too mad with them. And then you're presenting something actually visual that your stakeholders can riff off, in terms of like having a conversation about, okay, I think this bit's the most important. I think this bit's the most important. So there's that to try and move them towards a direction, rather than it going round in circles, which it will have done inevitably for a while. And then your bit around kind of taking a couple of steps. So I usually say the recommendation should be kind of almost like a small bet, low risk thing. So an iteration of a couple of steps that are doable, that we can go and, you know, test an assumption, bust a myth, figure out the feasibility of something, check on the costs, and then come back and report. So This was where I, actually in the conference last year, a lot of people said to me, we don't feel right about recommending. Should we? I actually had a question which was, should we as BAs be recommending an option? And I think yes, because what you're doing there and recommending steps is that you're kind of giving the stakeholders something to react to. You're giving something tangible to have a discussion about, because another kind of feature of this, when you look at these mischief areas, is they become lots of theoretical discussion. So if you can kind of come up with a couple of, you know, this is what those options look like in context. This is what I think is the direction. And then, but to your point of, there might be other things going on that enable somebody to say, that's not the right option for me. They don't have to kind of, you know, that they can see that might not be the right thing in a bigger context, and then have some kind of next steps based on the option that they do go for, whether or not it's the recommendation or not. And being able to just check behind the scenes as well. You know, if I've recommended a 10-week discovery with a business analyst and a user researcher, when can I do that? Like, when have I got somebody to do that? Or what is the next step that we need to schedule that? Or so they're very clear in their mind what we're doing next.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the idea of breaking the opportunities down and using prototypes to test assumptions, ideas, to discover. And sometimes we might feel constrained, that we might feel we have to say we've got the answer, and we might not know the answer because it's such a hairball of a problem, a knotty mess. But the only way to kind of move forward understanding, one of the ways to move forward understanding, is to test out an assumption, an idea. But you need trust, because your idea or assumption might be false. You might have misunderstood what the context is because it is so complicated. But the value of that is the learning that you, as you're pulling your thread, your cable, you learn that it's attached to something else. And it's a risk, because your stakeholders might want perfect solution first time, and that you've understood everything because you've done a discovery on that problem area. But if it's so big and hairy and horrid, you might have to test assumptions and work with the stakeholders to understand that problem context, rather than assuming that you've got the answer. And so I really like prototyping, breaking problems down into smaller components if we can. Right, we're coming towards the end. Any final hints and tips, ideas for how people can use the concepts that we've been talking about in today's pod? And I'm going to go to Mike first of all. Any kind of hints and tips on anything that we've discussed today?
Yeah, I mean, I think trying to understand a bit about the people and the people motivations, and bear in mind that there might be some unpredictable behavior that's caused by something that you have absolutely no idea about. So you can build relationships with people by by working with them and proving that you're on their side, you're taking their interests. And humor can be helpful. It can be disruptive at times. So apologies for that. But it can help to break things down a little bit. If you've got a really tense meeting, sometimes that just helps break the ice a little bit, and people might relax a little bit more. Touch wood, I haven't had any disasters with that so far, but you never know.
I was thinking about the mischief you caused at a BA manager forum session. I'm not sure, Karen, were you involved getting people to stand in shapes to get out of their comfort zone? I thankfully wasn't available for that one, but that little bit of mischief maybe there, a little bit of humour and engagement.
And the idea was to just get people to in their teams to spell out a word using the shapes of their bodies. So they stood up and spelled words, which was good because it wasn't, nobody was expecting it. Until I traveled down on the train that morning, I wasn't even expecting it. Nobody was expecting it. It came out of the blue and actually did a really good job of breaking the ice. I think it helped make the session enjoyable for all of us. So.
Brilliant. And then Karen, same question to you. Any final hints and tips or advice for anyone that's listened to today's pod in this context of mischief management?
I wanted to pick up on that and say, actually, even though that sounds like, oh, hang on, what were we doing? There is an element there of, if you've got a group of stakeholders and they've all got different opinions, even building that rapport between them and giving them that space to have some empathy between them. So not just the empathy you've got for them and understanding, but that empathy as a group is kind of underrated. People go, oh, it's just an icebreaker, isn't it? But sometimes it can be more. And I guess the other thing I would say to BAs is, don't be afraid of putting up something, what we've called straw mans in the past, or, kind of just ideas. While you've got a group of people that are just theorizing, or they've got a bunch of things in their head, they've got different stakeholders got different models. And so they're not all talking the same thing. As soon as you put like a simple model on the wall or on the screen or whatever, they've got something to work against. So even if that's wrong and they go, that you haven't understood this, it's not the levers that I'm interested in, I'm challenging that kind of why that's that costly, it opens up a different dialogue to the dialogue that's probably been going on for quite a while before, which is a lot of people in their heads, really, for all the right reasons, all kind of usually it's from a good place. But yeah, that's the power of being a BA, is you can use your tools to put that up and drive the conversation forward. Even if you've driven it forward a couple of steps, that's a win, right?
Yeah. And I don't ever do this, but I'm going to say to the listeners, if you've just listened to what Karen said, please go look at that other pod that Karen did with us, because my remembrance of that was that you talk about some idea prototypes, and that links to what you've just said there. Use the models, explore ideas, and try and move things forward. And if you're trying to move things forward with an outcome focus for your stakeholders, your customers, for your organization, then surely you're doing the right thing. That's your job, isn't it? So, right, and I'm not going to answer my own question for a change, but I'm going to say thank you to Mike for behaving and not causing too much mischief today. And Karen, thank you for coming back on the brew and bringing this concept to us. And I look forward to hearing any more discussions that come up about mischief and how we might move confidence forward with people dealing with these knotty necklace problems, which I really like that analogy. So thank you. If you've got any ideas for future BA Brew episodes, please do email us babrew@assistkd.com. And don't forget to follow, like, subscribe. And thank you very much to everyone that's listened and watched to today's pod today. Thank you.